Topic number 2. For more than 2 years now, the United States government, under the Bolsheviks, has been dragging Americans down the path toward national suicide in nuclear war. America's controlling military strategy today is a kamikaze plan which I first revealed in AUDIO LETTER 35 for June 1978. If there should be all-out war between the United States and Russia, the United States will be at a hopeless military disadvantage. The Russians completely destroyed the rough military balance between East and West during the closing months of 1977. During those months, as I reported in AUDIO LETTERS 26 through 29, the Russians deployed their new secret space triad of manned strategic weapons. And since that time, the Russians have had men in space constantly on a routine basis. Meanwhile, the United States can do nothing but sit and watch. Our famous space shuttle, already 2 years behind schedule, just keeps sitting on the ground instead of flying into space. And the biggest American space spectacular in the past 3 years was the alleged crash of Skylab 1 year ago this month. But as I detailed in AUDIO LETTER 48, even that episode was a hoax. Skylab had actually been shot down 21 months earlier, as I reported in AUDIO LETTER 27. For more than 2 years, we have been at Russia's mercy militarily. If the Kremlin were the real source of nuclear war fever today, the United States would already lie in smoking ruins. But it hasn't happened. And the reason it hasn't happened is something I've been reporting to you now for 2.5 years. Those who formerly controlled the Kremlin, the atheistic Bolsheviks, control it no more. They have been overthrown and expelled by a secret sect of native Russian Christians. The expelled Bolsheviks from Russia have been flocking in droves mainly here to the United States for a new start. And so, unsuspected by most Americans, the true relationship between the United States and Russia has been turned upside down. The Bolsheviks who used to rule Russia now rule the United States. And now that they are here, they are still as vicious and warlike as they ever were in Russia. If America were ruled today by reasonable and honest men, concerned for the welfare of all the people, they would take an objective look at our relations with Russia. On one hand, they would see the military fact that Russia now has the means to level our country a dozen times over in a matter of minutes. But on the other hand, reasonable men would also take stock of the fact that Russia has not unleashed that awesome capability. Instead, the Russians have so far confined themselves to a piecemeal war of attrition against our own war-making capacity. Looking at all this, reasonable men would at least consider the possibility that Russia prefers peace to war. And so our leaders, if they were reasonable and prudent, would at least open up meaningful talks with the leaders of Russia. They would at least make an honest effort to find out if war with Russia might be avoided without loss of honor. But, my friends, the Bolsheviks are now in control of America's policies, and they are not reasonable men. They are obsessed with a satanic frenzy for power. Their creed is rule or ruin. They seek only their own personal gain, no matter what the cost may be to everyone else. They want to start over with a new and complete Bolshevik dictatorship here in America, and from there work on outward in a new bid for world control. But Russia, controlled by the new breed in the Kremlin, stands in their way. The Bolsheviks now entrenched here in America know that they cannot hope to destroy Russia with America's inferior military power. This is especially true because Russia's rulers, unlike our own, have provided extensive civil defense preparations to protect their people. But the Bolsheviks will be satisfied if they can only wound Russia grievously enough to badly disrupt Russia internally. The Bolsheviks here believe that they will accomplish their purpose if they can kill as many as 20 million Russians in nuclear war. They are convinced that nuclear casualties that large will be enough to preoccupy the Russians with their own internal problems for many years, and that will leave the Bolsheviks here relatively free to make a fresh start with the smoking remains of the United States. They will be free to impose their own Bolshevik dictatorship on the haunted minority of Americans who will survive Nuclear War I. In order to achieve their goal of killing 20 million Russians, the Bolsheviks here will have to accept a nuclear war that will kill at least 160 million Americans. To you and me, a plan like that is insane. But to the Bolsheviks, those odds are very acceptable, because, my friends, in Bolshevik calculations, you and I don't count. We are expendable. The only losses which do matter to them are their own, and the Bolsheviks believe that their own casualties in Nuclear War I will be very small, because they plan to choose the moment for war themselves by triggering a surprise American nuclear first strike against Russia. And because they will know when war is about to start, they will be able to protect themselves. They plan to use their positions of governmental power to hide in government war bunkers throughout the United States. When Nuclear War I erupts, the Bolsheviks here intend to be the main occupants of the 96 secret underground cities of the Federal Relocation Ark. They will pull down the temple on our heads while they themselves hide in safety. There is now a dangerous and destructive war of cat and mouse going on between Russia's new rulers and the Bolsheviks here. Each side knows what the other is up to, and their strategies against one another are in a constant state of flux. The Russians, for their part, know that the Bolsheviks want to throw America's nuclear might at Russia in a surprise attack. And as I reported in AUDIO LETTER 53 last January, the hardliners in the Kremlin are now in the driver's seat. Unlike the White Dove faction who lost influence last October 1979, the hardliners are convinced that nuclear war is inevitable, and so they are preparing the Russian people for war with America. But at the same time, they're using secret warfare to chip away and reduce America's economic and military strength. For example, Russian sabotage is taking a steadily rising toll of railroad tank cars, chemical plants, refineries, and other military targets. Have you ever asked yourself why all these so-called derailments involve chemical tank cars? If it were mere chance, it would often involve box cars, or coal cars, or flat cars, or automobile carriers, or maybe refrigerated cars full of milk. But no, to judge by all the supposed rail accidents, you would think that the trains are hauling nothing but toxic chemicals these days. And then there is Russia's expanding campaign of geophysical warfare. One aspect of this involves earthquakes and volcanoes like Mount St. Helens, as I discussed last month. Another aspect of geophysical warfare is weather warfare, which is now going on with a vengeance in the United States. One reason I tried so hard to record AUDIO LETTER 54 last February before I was overcome by my heart attack was to give a warning about weather warfare and food shortages to come. And this summer, the weather has gone crazy all over the United States. The northern plains are in the grip of a drought worse than anything since the Dust Bowl of the 30s. The nationwide heat wave has taken over 1,000 lives and is killing cattle, broiling chickens alive, and wiping out crops. And next, my friends, we must brace ourselves for hurricanes unlike anything ever seen in America. Slowly but surely, the Bolsheviks here are being hemmed in by the Russians. For the past 6 months, the Russians have been gradually pulling the fangs of the Bolshevik dragon. As a result, the Bolsheviks here are gradually putting more and more of their eggs into fewer and fewer baskets. With their backs to the wall, the Bolsheviks here are concentrating on actions to go for the head of Russia. Their attitude is pure offense, even at the expense of neglecting anything of a defensive nature. For example, The Caribbean is now up for grabs. The United States is paying no attention. Instead, the Bolsheviks here are trying to stir up problems for Russia around her own periphery. The Bolsheviks can't find a rope big enough to tie down the Russian bear, so instead they're trying to use a million little threads. And by means of their invasion of the Kremlin itself with genetic replicas, which I reported last month, the Bolsheviks are trying to unbalance the Kremlin. I can now report that during April and May, the Bolsheviks came very close to toppling the new leadership in the Kremlin. Within the past several weeks, Russia's new rulers have staged a strong comeback, but the battle is still raging, and all the Bolsheviks really want is a moment of weakness in the Kremlin, because very soon now they will have enough Minuteman TX traveling missiles deployed to make possible a first strike against Russia, thus triggering Nuclear War I. My friends, some people have asked me why I revealed what I did last month about America's secret mobile missile, the Minuteman TX. The answer is that it is time for us, the American people, to wage preventive warfare. Ours must be a war of knowledge and truth, a war to prevent war. We need to stop the secret spiral of warfare by both the Russians and the Bolsheviks here, because you and I are the ones who are caught in the middle. Topic number 3. Centuries ago, the founder of the powerful Rothschild dynasty proclaimed a principle which became famous. He said, "Give me the power to issue a nation's money, and I care not who writes the laws." Since that time, the manipulation of money and its relationship to gold reserves has been a determining factor in world affairs. It has fueled ever-widening struggles for world power. That's why Henry Ford Sr. long ago said, and I quote, "War will not be abolished until its roots are cut, and one of its main roots is a false money system and the high priests thereof. The youth who can solve the money question will do more for the world than all the professional soldiers in history." Unquote. My friends, in my book 7 years ago, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, I revealed the basic plan to bring on inflation miseries which we are all beginning to suffer today. They are leading toward economic catastrophe, unemployment, dictatorship, and nuclear war. But they are all rooted in economics and the control of money. And the deepest root of all is the Fort Knox gold scandal. So if you truly care about your country and want to help save it for yourself and for your children, the Fort Knox gold scandal is the place to begin. In my mail lately, I have noticed a dramatic rise in the number of people asking me, "What can I do?" And I believe that I know the reason. Years ago, the warnings I gave about coming economic hardship and nuclear war sounded too remote to worry about. But now the economic problems are pinching all of us worse and worse by the day. And now the bright skies of yesteryear are giving way to the gathering storm clouds of nuclear war. Up until now, I have generally resisted giving specific answers to the question of what we can do. There were many signs that people were asking without really wanting to do anything, and it simply is not enough to just stand up once, shout, and sit down again to watch the world go by, or to meet, eat, and retreat. If you are really serious about wanting to do something, you have to be willing to stick with it, because America's enemies, both within and without, have learned how they can almost always defeat us. All they have to do is to close their mouths and wait. They just bide their time while we fuss a while, then fall silent and forget about it. Then they go on their own way as if nothing had ever happened. The only way to get results is to hang on like a bulldog. You have to keep at it in spite of one disappointment after another until something breaks loose. You cannot let them wear you out. Instead, you have to wear them out. A perfect example of this is provided by the efforts of my friend Mr. Edward Durrell, concerning the Fort Knox gold scandal. 6 years ago, Mr. Durrell started in much the same way as you could start now. He first learned about my charges concerning the denudement of America's gold at Fort Knox by reading about them in a newspaper. He had been concerned about the gold backing of the dollar for many years, but my charges were new to him. He decided to find out for himself whether my charges held water. So he began a very informal, almost casual way. He inquired of one or two officials, including his congressman, whether there was anything to the story. And it was their responses that caused him to start digging deeper and still deeper, seeking the truth. Not because those initial responses confirmed what I had charged. Far from it. Instead, Mr. Durrell discovered that he was unable to receive a meaningful, conclusive answer at all about it. Most Americans today would have just given up at that point. The easy thing to do is to shrug your shoulders and say, "Well, I tried. I guess they won't tell me anymore." But not Mr. Durrell. He's a man who demands answers, and he refuses to be satisfied until he gets them. What's more, he knows what too many of us have forgotten, that under the Constitution, it is our right, it is our duty to seek the redress of grievances. And so for every unsatisfactory answer he received, Mr. Durrell responded by asking more questions of more people. He kept careful track of his correspondence, including telephone calls, letters, telegrams, and personal meetings. He did not just swallow the replies he got, but he analyzed them. With each official reply, he asked himself, "Did this answer my question? If not, why not? Did they contradict what they have told me in earlier correspondence? If so, why? Does the story I get from official A agree with the story given me by official B? If not, which is correct?" By confronting people with their own official answers or with their silence when they refused to answer, he began driving chinks into the armor. And because of his determined persistence, he long ago began catching them in mistakes, serious mistakes. For 6 years now, he has kept it up. And now, through his own efforts, Mr. Durrell has compiled his own file of extremely damaging evidence about Fort Knox. By these methods, Mr. Durrell long ago became an authority in his own right about the Fort Knox gold scandal, and he did it simply by refusing to give up. He has contacted numerous members of Congress, officials of the Departments of Treasury and Justice, and many others, up to and including two presidents, Ford and the alleged Carter. For his efforts, he has received everything from stony silence to outright provable lies. He has worked long and hard for 6 years, and now, if there were an honest public investigation into the Fort Knox affair, his files might well lead to the imprisonment of some of the most powerful men in America. The Watergate scandal was child's play compared with a covered-up Fort Knox gold scandal. This brings me to the reason for my directing your attention to Senator William Proxmire, as I did in Topic No. 1. He's chairman of the powerful Senate Banking Committee, and in that capacity he holds a position of prime responsibility and public trust to carry out an honest, thorough, and public investigation of the Fort Knox gold scandal. And so, my friends, I would strongly suggest that the starting point be the evidence about the huge missing shipment of gold from Fort Knox on January 20, 1965. For 5 years now, Senator Proxmire has ignored the evidence given him about that shipment, which was omitted from official Treasury records. At today's gold prices, the shipment would have been worth more than $1 billion, $1,000 million. But more importantly, that missing shipment was only one of many which took place from Fort Knox, according to my confidential information. It was only one episode in the overall program to make America gold poor. And so the missing gold shipment of January 20, 1965 points at the very heart of the causes for our crumbling economy today. But to this day, Senator William Proxmire has not lifted a finger to launch a Fort Knox investigation. I want to make it clear, however, that I have no evidence that Proxmire himself is involved in the illegal gold removals from Fort Knox, but I can prove that he has consistently ignored large amounts of strong evidence of catastrophic fraud surrounding Fort Knox. He's made a name for himself by handing out Golden Fleece awards for petty matters, but he has ignored the gold scandal, which is fleecing the entire American people. Up to now, Senator Proxmire has been seriously derelict in his duty to investigate publicly and honestly the Fort Knox gold scandal. But what matters most now is not Proxmire, but the scandal itself. It must be exposed if America is to be saved. It's that simple, my friends. And so I'm about to give you step one in my answer to those of you who have been asking me, what can I do? I emphasize that this is only the first step. If you choose to take it, my friends, then many more steps can follow. But I must also give you this clear warning. If you will not take this first step, nothing else can follow. In the name of freedom, we must be heard. We must begin a concerted campaign to open up an honest public investigation of the Fort Knox gold scandal. And we should all join together in directing our energies at Senator William Proxmire. It is his committee which has the prime responsibility to carry out the necessary public investigation. Our goal is not to attack Proxmire, but to bring about the investigation of Fort Knox. To do that, Proxmire will have to have public support, just as General Brown depended upon public support in the underwater missile crisis 4 years ago. And so, regardless of his inaction up to now, we must let Senator Proxmire know that he will have our support for a Fort Knox investigation. It is not his head that we want. It is the truth about Fort Knox. Let us open up Fort Knox. You may send letters, mailgrams, or telegrams to Senator William Proxmire, Proxmire, Senate Office Building, Washington, D.C. If you want your message to be read and to have an impact, you must do three things. First, make it legible. If your handwriting is good, a handwritten letter is fine. Otherwise, it's better to type. Second, keep it short. If you write a long, rambling letter, it will just go into the trash basket. Third, be specific. Tell Senator Proxmire clearly in your own words what you want from him. If I were writing a letter to Senator Proxmire about this, I would say something like the following. Dear Senator Proxmire, I'm writing to request your urgent attention to a vital matter that falls within your jurisdiction as Chairman of the Senate Banking Committee. I'm speaking of the allegations of Dr. Beter about massive fraud involving United States gold supplies at Fort Knox. Looking at our crumbling economy, I'm inclined to believe Dr. Beter's charges that America has secretly become gold poor. Our economic problems today are exactly those which Dr. Beter has warned about for years, and yet I have never seen any effort by your committee to prove him wrong. I would like to believe your reputation as a defender of the public financial interest in Washington. So I hope that you will launch a full, complete public investigation of the alleged Fort Knox gold scandal without delay. If you will do so, I assure you of my strong personal support. As a starting point, let me suggest a piece of evidence which Dr. Beter says you were provided some 5 years ago. This was the written admission by the then Director of the United States Mint that a giant gold shipment from Fort Knox took place on January 20, 1965, even though the shipment was not shown on official Treasury listings. I anxiously await your reply. I am keeping a copy of this message and plan to show it, with your reply, to everyone I know." Unquote. What I have just suggested is just to get you started. By all means, express your own thoughts in your own way as much as possible. But whatever you do, be sure to keep a file for your correspondence about this. When you get his reply, don't be discouraged or surprised if it turns out there'll be an attack on my credibility or lip service or even silence. Just keep in mind that the Director of the United States Mint contradicted other Treasury documents about the missing shipment. That discrepancy has never been resolved, so don't let yourself be put off easily. If you receive a reply from Senator Proxmire, you may want to show both your letter and his to your friends. And to give them more background about it all, let them listen to audio letter number 2 for July 1975. That tape contains a great deal about Fort Knox, and it's a good starting point. Beyond that, you may wish to follow up with more letters, always keeping a copy for your file. And in the months to come, if I learn that people are taking this first step, and it's only a first step, I plan to have more to say. But now, it's up to you, my friends. It is time to give you my last-minute summary. In this audio letter, I've tried to call your attention to several things. One is the fact that the danger of all-out war is coming closer and closer to the surface. Once again, the Middle East is heating up as a possible fuse to set off nuclear war. War tensions are being excited primarily by the deliberate actions of Israel. The situation has become so critical that for only the 7th time in history, an emergency session of the United Nations has just been held to discuss it. Meanwhile, the Bolsheviks here in the United States government are being hemmed in more and more by the secret Russian warfare of attrition. Secret military projects are still underway here in America, but the economic and industrial base that supports it all is being whittled away. A few days ago, Mount St. Helens, the most spectacular example yet of Russian geophysical warfare, erupted again. And as usual, it came as a surprise to all the authorities. Only the day before, Washington State had started allowing tourists closer to the volcano because of its seeming stability. And the Russian weather war against America, which I revealed last February, is continuing. And Russia's geophysical warfare against America is still expanding. Just 2 days ago, 2 Russian cobalt bombs, which had been planted in deep caverns in the Midwest, were detonated. One was a short distance west of Cincinnati, Ohio. The other was under the northwest corner of the huge Fort Knox Military Reservation in Kentucky. The result was a strong earthquake called extremely rare, quote unquote, by the United States Geological Survey. It registered 5.8 on the Richter scale and shook 12 states from Wisconsin to South Carolina. It may have been rare before the era of geophysical warfare, my friends, but now anything can happen. My friends, many people have been asking me the question, what can I do? I have given you step one of my answer, which deals with the Fort Knox gold scandal. It is something we can do, if we will. Our goal must be to get back the monetary gold reserves which have been stolen from us, to restore strength and confidence to the dollar, and to revive honor and trust in a newly reborn United States government. Because only in that way can we hope to remove the causes of war, which are now so imminent. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.